Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Updates. Smurf here, your purveyor of things all geeky and nerdy in the world that is just full of turmoil and cold coffee. Well, yeah, my coffee's cold. Hurts my feel bads. Yeah. Oh, I know, I crack myself up. You have to. When you're sitting in isolation or you spend most of your day alone in a studio or, you know, in the bullpen by yourself, you find unique and interesting ways to entertain yourself because no one else will talk to you. And you can put googly eyes on your stuff. No, I'm just kidding. I won't rip that commercial off. We are sponsored by Susie Q's, who is working hard to make you look good. Right now, she is offering a discount on her very special and unique Dragon Scale bracelet. Enter in Dragon at checkout, and you will receive a 20% off your purchase price for that item. They are going fast, and this is only valid till the end of the month. At the end, it is gone. Well, the bracelet's not, but the discount is. So pop over, check the link, check them on Facebook, check them on Instagram. Susie's a brilliant, talented, creative, and such sweet. We love Susie. She makes us laugh. And she's just so perky and bubbly. She really is. If you haven't met Susie at a con, it is an experience, because that girl is just overflowing with enthusiastic energy. Can you tell we like Susie? She's fun. We've hung out. We've drank. We've told stories. Anyway, hi. How are things? Things here are the same as they were last week, oddly enough. The world hasn't gone too off the rails. The world is in motion. Things are starting to kind of thaw out as we see it's really interesting as I'm sitting here reading articles and as people, as things progress to new levels. In fact, I'm inspired. So this week, of course, starting tomorrow, San Diego Comic-Con starts its virtual extravaganza. I mean, I really don't know what else to call it, because it's unprecedented. It's unique. San Diego has never missed a year in all of its history that I can recall. So for them to, you know, put on the virtual con and all of that, I'm curious and anxious to see what they pull off. But it's funny because what I saw was residents who live in the San Diego County have decided to decorate the grounds where San Diego Comic-Con is held, at the convention center there, which is a massive, massive complex. And they've erected a comic book shrine. I don't even know what else to call it. There's different places throughout the convention center where they have put flowers and candles and books and pictures of, like, movies. And I mean, there's even a person left a Guardians of the Galaxy t-shirt. There's a lot of different art that's been put up. A Comic-Con poster from 2019 is in one of the pictures. So these people have taken the time, you know, like in the middle of the night, I guess, to go and set up these shrines all over the convention center. Channel, I think, 10 or 9 out there covered this story and put it up on their webpage. Yeah, one of them even has a picture of the Shakespeare Star Wars with Darth Vader. I mean, just people doing very creative, very inspiring things. So, yeah, I'm just okay. It's nice to see. It's really fun. Go check it out. Of course, the online comic experience, comic-con at home, will be running from July 22nd to July 26th. So it kicks off tomorrow. We'll see what transpires. I'll be tuning in. I'll be in and out, to be honest with you. There's a couple of things I want to see. And this might be something that, as we go forward, San Diego Comic decides to do more of. I'm surprised they haven't done more streaming. I know they are about the almighty dollar, but let's face it. They're going to sell out. They're the biggest, the brightest, the largest. Anybody goes to San Diego. So why not make it available online for streaming? Because if you can't get into H, why not stream it? It's a sold out. It's like, sports. If the stadium is sold out, you could still reach more people by streaming online. Just saying. It wouldn't be bad. Something to think about. Speaking of which, there have been some interesting things flying around. Speaking of fans, the latest, and I see this all the time. Don't get suckered in by these so-called new trailers and all this leaked footage. Because sometimes it can bite you. And let's face it, we've all fallen for that trap. We've all gone down that rabbit hole where you see, the new trailer for such and such, and it's just a bunch of clips or hodgepodge stuff put together from different films to make it look snazzy and all kinds of colorful. So everybody kind of totally bit on this, and there's a lot of stories, and I think the problem is there's not a whole lot out there when it comes to new press, new releases, and everybody's just anxious to see something. And everybody kind of got hooked on this one. The New Mutants September Disney Plus release. Total hoax. I'm not even going to try and drag that one out or sugarcoat it. Total and absolute hoax. as much as everybody wants to see this film, because even I'm at this point really, really, really curious about it, because it's been pushed off, put back, reshot. I mean, this production has suffered so much. I mean, even in the production of it could be a film of what could go wrong, it has gone wrong with this poor film. And everybody, I think at this point just has a soft spot. So this commercial that a fan created dropped, teasing promoting a September 4th debut on Disney Plus. And it looks very impressive. I even went and checked it out. But I don't see that. Just like I don't see, because there's other things that have been floating out there. The rumor mill is hard at work right now, especially when you're dealing with the Punisher, for example. And I've kind of avoided these stories. Same thing with Daredevil. The actors are being, pushed towards the cinematic world, and with Disney now almost owning everything, everyone's saying we're going to see them show up in their own Disney Plus series and all of that, which is false. Nothing's been written. Everybody wants John Bentonall to come back as the Punisher. And even Disney has said, yes, we like him as the Punisher. If they do a series, if he doesn't end up in a film, because I think what we're going to see is Daredevil and Punisher show up in one of the Spider-Man films. And at this point, with COVID and the push-off and their contracts, John Bentonall can jump in at any time. He's not restrained by the contract that Marvel created with Netflix. Daredevil is coming to the end of that contract restriction. So we may even see Daredevil, Charlie Cox, show up in the red suit, not only as Matt Murdock, but as Daredevil. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Hulu-based series, potentially, because this is the back door now. So, wow, that's not dirty. The whole thing is, you're dealing with some very interesting forces, because Disney has their image, they want to maintain it, and Hulu is now under their control as well. So it's very interesting, the dynamic and how all of this is going to work itself out. So if we see John Bentonall, which I know we will, everybody actually really loved his Punisher, and I'm in on that. I really loved his portrayal of the character. It struck a node, and the characterization and just how approachable he made the character, but just so fiendishly vicious. And you can just see that. I mean, in anyone's situation, given the situation, I think anyone could easily become the Punisher. I don't think they could be as successful, but I could see someone, you know, like Charlie Bronson, make my day, you know, go over the edge type of, you know, man falling down scenario. But the whole build up to the Punisher is great, and what we see from John, from his character portrayal, is spectacular. And of course, Charlie Cox as Daredevil is a no-brainer. So as we get closer to this, we'll see what Disney decides to do, because they're in the driver's seat. Can you imagine being at that board meeting as far as who all is in charge of what? I mean, they would need their own convention center just to have a meeting for all of the different projects, and how do you even steer that ship? Good Lord. Yeah, that's just mind-boggling. I was thinking about that the other night. See, things you don't want to do when you're laying in bed is start thinking, well, how does Marvel hold a meeting with Disney for all of their properties and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. So, anyway, as you can tell, with this, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Punisher with its own film series, maybe. I mean, with Phase 4 on its way, it's really difficult to say. But maybe even Doctor Strange? They do kind of all work in the same neighborhood, so it's a possibility. But if this is going to happen, there's no script, there's no contract, there's nothing right now. There's just word. And if this were to happen, money says Punisher's heading towards Hulu. Same with Daredevil, if they're not in the film. Now, with that in mind, of course, with New Mutants, of course, being delayed, pushed back, it is supposed to hit August 28th of this year. That was the target. Theaters still have yet to recover, reopen, or otherwise become any way functional for the public. So, maintaining correct social etiquettes and everything that's in place, different regions. I mean, everybody's got their own set of rules right now, so it's really difficult, and I don't see that August 28th date really, really being in stone. In fact, I'm going on the record right now saying that you're going to probably see New Mutants pushed off again, the X-Men curse, till next year. And I could be wrong, but I'm money says that that's going to be it. I wouldn't even be surprised if Wonder Woman gets knocked again to maybe Christmas time, just because of the situation and everything that's going on. We may get some answers a little bit sooner than just kind of waiting to see what writing is on the wall. Thursday, July 23rd at 2 p.m., Pacific time, that is, the New Mutants will have their Comic-Con at home panel. So we may get an answer quicker than we think in this whole scenario. Just because I'm sure the fans are anxious, the mutant fans, and I know they want to try and keep the steam behind this project because I think it's going to need it, because it's so easily forgotten. Hell, I even forgot about it until I was like, oh yeah, that's right. So it's easily enough slipped under the radar, under the carpet. So will we see an answer? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe they'll give us a little teaser, some additional footage, because we know it's done. So let us see some of it. Give us like 15 minutes. That would be great. I don't know if they'll do that. I don't know if the mouse is up for that, but I really like, give us a solid 15 minutes, and that would get my interest. That would keep me happy and talking and excited and pumped. But, and speaking of streaming news, as I continue to watch Stargirl and watching the DC Universe, kind of, I don't know what they're doing, but now, of course, everyone's talking about the merger with, well, HBO Max and everything else. The writing is on the wall for the DC streaming service to pretty much will go the way of the dodo. I wouldn't be surprised that we see this happen really, really soon. Let's face it, DC had a great idea, but unfortunately they don't have the content to carry something like this. If DC was thinking or had gone about it, if I was in charge, I honestly probably would have approached Amazon, because Marvel and Netflix being in bed together and all that, and hell, maybe even go to Netflix. I'm sure they're excited to just get another property back after losing Marvel and everything that's going to end up going over to Disney. I'm sure Netflix would have eagerly jumped on DC coming over, giving their content, and streaming exclusively through them. But we enter into the HBO Max world, and as everything now continues, because, of course, Stargirl is destined for season 2 to be over there. We've got Doom Patrol, which is now, season 2 is up, and I haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting. But I don't know if I want to get in on this. Like I said, another streaming service. I know we won't have to worry about DC for long, as people just, there's nothing there. You only can watch, you know, the cartoon so much. Swamp Thing completely sank in the swamp. And you've got, you know, the Young Justice cartoon, The Outsiders, which, okay. But the Titans, which is probably the more, I mean, between Doom Patrol and Titans, you've got some great content, but not enough to carry a streaming service. Not for someone to, you know, pop for the any of that. So we'll see. And of course, you've got the Harlequin cartoon, which is, I hear, relatively entertaining. Someone was telling me about that, and I just kind of laughed. Because as much as I want to watch it, I don't have to. I'm really at the limit as far as my time now for watching everything. And I want to listen to Kaylee Cuoco do Harley. I mean, that her voice in the character, I'm sure, has got to be entertaining. Because I never really thought how high-pitched she really is. But, you know, she can carry the role very, very well. So, anyway, we'll see what happens. I know it probably won't be too much longer. We'll probably finish out the year, and then we'll see the big announcement that the DC Online service is getting rolled over into HBO Max. And we'll see. CW just better be watching its back, because they're next. I'm telling you, there's no way that they're going to be able to hold on to all of these properties and make it out. So, yeah. Good luck, guys. We'll see how that goes. In other news, speaking of TV, I saw this show up, and as much as I was excited, I was also saddened, because The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. Now, some of you may or may not be aware of this show, but it is a awesome, brilliantly casted series that was so short-lived on TV by none other than, of course, legend Bruce Campbell. He played this adventurer in the West. The show showed up in, God, the early 90s? I want to say like 91, 1990. It was on Fox. It didn't really last long, but it did highlight some very interesting characters, some fun storylines, and I loved the hell out of it. But of course, it went kaput. There is a reunion set for this, and it's a table read of the cast getting together with the co-creator and showrunner, Carlton Cuss. Carlton Cuss. Cuss? Cuss. Cuss. Excuse me. Cuss. Of course, you know him from, like, Lost and Bates Motel. The reunion is set to take place Friday, July 31st at 5 p.m. Through 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. So, depending upon your time zone, to watch the event is going to cost you $12.50. Of course, proceeds do benefit, go to benefit Color of Change, which is the nation's largest online racial justice organization, and Writers Guild Foundation. So it's a nonprofit that all of the funds from this reading are going to. So it'll be great. It does go to an amazing cause. So by all means, watch it. I think it'd be kind of fun to get in there, watch the old Briscoe County Jr. And Bruce Campbell. Come on. I know the man says he's retired, but he's never going to retire. And of course, I don't know how many times I can watch Burn Notice on actual repeat. So yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a cool 2 hours. And of course, you know, Briscoe County Jr. is now at 25 years. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of ad-libbing. I'm sure there's going to be certain liberties taken. Of course, everyone keeps wondering if they really will bring the show back. And, of course, this is another one that, you know, Campbell is like, well, we've had conversations. We stayed in touch. But, you know, if things work out, maybe. But there's no plan. Just the table read. And I think it'll be worth it. It would be a fun little, why not? What are you going to do for 2 hours on a Friday night? You're not going out, that's for sure. In other streaming news, and this didn't really catch me off guard or anything like that, but now they're talking that Natalie Portman is going to be returning for the Obi-Wan show that Disney Plus is working on for the streaming services. And there was this fan poster that got released that Ewan McGregor actually really like got on board with, because it looks spectacular. I mean, it looks like theater quality. And we've got Kat. Yep. So it's really, it looks top quality and as much of a big hit as The Mandalorian. There's also word that Hayden Christensen is also expected to be involved. And of course, these are just going to be, I'm going to guarantee, cut scenes, things to take us back to, you know, the first trilogies. Not the first trilogies, but, you know, like the Clone Wars, and try and give that whole debacle some substance and kind of fill in the holes, I'm sure, with what went on, because George Lucas should never write romance. That's the takeaway, really, from the Clone Wars. George Lucas just should never write romance. But I'm curious to see if they really do follow through with this, because this has been on again, off again. There was no plan. Even Ewan McGregor has admitted in interviews that there was no plan, but the fans just kind of forced this in there, and everyone's like, okay, there's a place for this. So with that said, we may even see like a full-blown Darth Vader cameo. And I wouldn't be surprised. Is Obi-Wan sitting there in the desert, you know, contemplating the woes of the universe and making sure Luke is being raised properly or not abused? So I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for this series, and to even see some cutback scenes going to the Old Republic and all of that will be, I think, will be kind of fun. I do want to revisit this, and Obi-Wan being my favorite Star Wars character just is icing on the cake. This is something I really want to see, because, you know, the prequels, some of the prequel parts are not total throwaways. I mean, there is some great substance. I know right away, as soon as you say the prequels, everyone jumps on the Jar Jar Binks wagon. And again, you know, it was their attempt to try and recreate, you know, the child enthusiast, like Baby Yoda. You know, what does that character look like? We thought it was Jar Jar. No, that was wrong. So there are some great qualities to the prequels. Even just seeing, you know, the droids come into existence and, you know, how that all played out. That was still kind of fun, even if, of course, just for the fan service, in addition to some of the lightsaber battles and actually seeing more than just a Jedi. You know, seeing multiple ones was, you know, actually kind of enjoyable. So with us revisiting this and Natalie Portman on board, evidently all things are fine and forgiven with whatever is going on in that camp, especially with her doing another Marvel movie with Thor. I'm actually kind of really set on this one. This one might be kind of fun. So, of course, as soon as I get any real concrete information on when they're going to actually show the series or start filming, I'll let you know, just because, you know, that's the kind of guy I am. So, speaking of production dates, there's been some, of course, everyone's getting back into the interview circuit, and they're hitting all the talk shows and all of that. One, of course, was Seth MacFarlane showing up on, I think it was the Tonight Show that I saw him. Anyway, watch that, and of course, he's talking about season 3 of The Orville, and just how excited everybody is to get that show back on the air. Just from the standpoint of what they've been able to accomplish so far. Now, for me, The Orville kind of came out, I mean, we talked about it multiple times on the podcast with the group, with myself, and it was, we weren't sure what to expect. We didn't know if it was going to be fart jokes in space, if it was going to resemble anything of, like, you know, A Million Ways to Die in the West, or just exactly what Seth's future view was going to be. Because let's face it, the man is wickedly creative, incredibly talented. I mean, the guy can sing, he can dance, he can do it all. I mean, there is no shortage of talent when it comes to what Seth is capable of. But it's a question of which Seth are we going to get? So with that, season 1 hits for The Orville. Okay, I was curious enough. I was on board. It was well done. It was well produced, and it did kind of fill the sci-fi Star Trek void that was at the time. Season 2, an extreme improvement over season 1. Without a doubt, the direction, the vision, the storytelling, all of it was light years beyond what season 1 was. So, of course, everyone is on board for season 3. And we wait. The unfortunate side to this is, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but it's just kind of like a, Seth, of course, with Fox, they signed on, they're good to go, but with, again, the buyout and everything that happened, Seth was given an opportunity to, like, okay, where do you want to go? Do you want to stay with Fox? Do you want to go over to Hulu? And he jumped at the chance to go over to Hulu just for the simple fact that more budget, can, you know, still have, like, the lengthy show and still kind of, you know, get the same production quality, if not better, than what he was getting over at Fox. So now we're kind of stalled because it was already a little bit behind schedule, and just because of the quality that they're trying to put into the show. And Seth was quoted, and this is what he said: "We were right in the middle of shooting an episode on The Orville, so it's like when this thing airs at long last, whenever that is, one episode is going to be such that between one scene to the next, people are suddenly going to gain 20 pounds and have long white beards." So this is his reaction to what happened with COVID and the shutdown and all of that. He didn't want the fans to wait as long as they have. I mean, the plan was, of course, you know, get a little bit higher quality, get a little bit longer of a show, no commercials, which, you know, is kind of nice for a change. And, you know, he's just waiting for everyone to be able to go back to work, because originally they wanted to air it on late, you know, 2020, and get it out there. But now, who knows? With it going to Hulu, though, I am very happy with that choice. Because, like I said, they are going to be longer episodes. In fact, with them going over to Hulu, Seth said that they would be anywhere from 12 to 15 minutes longer, which I'm okay with that. The only caveat and kind of the downside to it, and I don't know if this is just for the new season or if this is going to be something going forward, but it was only going to have 11 episodes. And I think that's three shy of what they originally had talked about doing. So I don't know if that, where that falls into what was going on. I mean, the humor and everything on this show was great. And from everything that I've seen, all of the characters were returning. Of course, there were going to be additions as far as special guests and all of that, kind of like the same vein of Star Trek The Next Generation. Again, downside, they're only going to have two directors. So where season two is directed by, you know, a smattering of different people, Jonathan Franks being one of them, will not be returning. Seth MacFarlane is going to be one of the directors, and John Caesar is going to be the other one. So they're going to kind of keep it under wraps as far as who's controlling it and not have as many directors. I think cutting Franks out of the deal is a bad idea. I think both of his ones that he directed are regarded as like some of the best episodes for the series thus far. So what this does for the series and the COVID and all of that, I don't know. I know with the move to Hulu, it's a mixed bag for me. So when we will see it, that is the other question. How long till we really get a chance to see it will be up in the air. So depending upon when they can get it back, I'm thinking we won't see it until mid-2021 right now at this point. But, you know, that's just a best guess. I could be wrong. And with that, that brings me to this week's Shakedown. This week's comic book Shakedown is Cursed. You know what? I talked about this being leaked, well, not leaked, but the premiere date a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and I was excited and anxious, and I'm starting to find that there's a very thin line when it comes to production quality and content and everything that Netflix is trying to achieve, where Netflix is going right in one show in good direction is completely the opposite in others. And I'll give you examples here in a minute. But this week's Shakedown, I am doing Cursed. Now, everyone's trying to figure out what at least people have been asking me, where can they find this comic and what happened, what went on, did this just go straight to Netflix? So here's the Shakedown and here's the info. Frank Miller, of course, is the driving force behind this, as I reported a couple weeks ago. He's the one that put the unique spin on the Arthurian mythos and did the illustrations, because there are pictures floating out there. However, this is a young adult novel. This was released, I believe, back in 2019, and they did a quick job of getting this released. Because if my dates are correct, because I'm showing that a first print was 2019 in hardcover. So the book is available through Simon & Schuster if you're unable to find it in your local bookstore or going online. I was looking at one on eBay just to have it, to read it and to understand it, because the show, let's start at the beginning. The show itself and the production value that they put into this was very interesting. It was very unique, and it was fun in a lot of ways. I can't read Frank Miller comic books any longer. I want to put that out there. Just because his artwork has gotten to the point that it's really, really bad. I mean, it's not, I don't know if he just hasn't kept up the skill. He doesn't give a shit. I don't know what it is, but I can't look at his art any longer. And that's a shame, because his storytelling seems to still be on par with that of, like, Legends of the Dark Knight and 300, which I kept drawing a lot of parallels to while watching this, in addition to Warrior Nun. The commonalities of these two films, with Warrior Nun and Cursed, of course, the church, completely unhinged and off the rails, and the kind of one of the baddies in the story, which makes sense when you're looking at the underlying message and story for both. It makes more sense, just more for the Arthurian side, when you're looking at the timepiece and the relevance and the political climate of the time. Warrior Nun was just kind of like the intrigue built around the church and, you know, the mystery and the scandal. Both are just ruthless, and it's very interesting. But in Warrior Nun, the church almost seems like the victim, and have fallen for the ruse. Whereas Cursed, you have the red paladins that are, you know, burning villages and slaughtering, you know, helpless, innocent people all in the name of God. Yeah, very periodic piece. And, you know, actually that kind of goes along with the Crusades and everything that went on. It is a piece of history. Now, the take that Miller has on this departs from normal Arthurian lore, with Nimue, the Lady of the Lake, being the main character, and the focus is on her. And how he approaches this is absolutely brilliant. The whole creation of the character, the motivation, the drive, and just how she gets from girl wanting to run away to girl leading an entire people is skillfully done. Whereas Warrior Nun, not so much. In fact, at the end of it, you're still kind of like, what the fuck did I just watch? I really liked Curse from the standpoint of the character developing, and it was fun to see characters that are familiar, and you keep looking to see who is who. Of course, we have Merlin, who is absolutely brilliantly played by the actor that I can't remember his name at the moment, and I'm on a roll, so I'll look it up later. Merlin is perfect. He's a drunkard. He's out of control. He's old as shit, and is absolutely everything that I would expect Merlin to be in this period. He's a total cynic. He's just angry, and just continues to go through the paces until all of the signs are there. And he realizes this, and he's trying to get in front of it, but just keeps falling short. And it really is kind of like the running theme. Everybody has, like, their own curse that they're dealing with. Of course, Nimue is the sword. The sword is what caused Merlin's curse. Everyone around this artifact and everything that's going on just seems to be cursed. It's really subtle, and it's very well placed in there. And you see Nimue slowly change from, you know, this wide-eyed girl to this fierce warrior, and it's really, I enjoyed it. The writing, of course, is decent. There's some parts that I'm like, eh, but knowing that this is a young adult novel, I can see why those elements are there. It was interesting to see when and where they would use the violence and the gore, because in some situations I was expecting, like, full-on Game of Thrones just disembowelment, and nothing was there. It wasn't as extensive or as in your face. There were some subtle times, and there are some things that make you cringe, don't get me wrong. And it was just a unique choice of when and where they decided to use it. Then the crossfades between scenes with the artwork. It does strike me as very comic booky, while being kind of in the vein of 300. Just how the imaging and the transitions between scenes and characters, and it looked like an easy and cheap way of getting from one situation and one scene to the next. And in some situations, it works. In some, it's a little jarring, and they do try to tell a bit of the story as far as what goes on in these cutscenes, in these transitions. So do pay attention to them, because there are things that you're like, wait, did that happen? So it does kind of help progress the story while getting you geared up for the next scene. I do recommend watching this in one go. You really could, because it was simple. It wasn't as long. The dialogue is fun in some areas, and the, like I said, the lore is fun, because King Arthur's there, Merlin is there, and you start seeing some of the knights of the Round Table show up. Arthur isn't a complete shitbag, and you see his character kind of go through the paces of redemption and his own kind of, you know, work through his own demons, his own baggage of family and of honor and all of that. In addition to the fae folk, a few knights show up in there, and you know, it's just kind of fun. So the second season, which is a great question, will we see it? Will it happen? I'm thinking yes. I think the series is too fun to abandon with just a single episode. Don't get me wrong, it does end in kind of a cliffhanger style, but it does also put it to where it could just be the end and you're left wondering, well, that sucks, and at some point regular Arthurian lore kicks in, and you know, the rest is, as they say, history. So I'm curious how they bring it back, but Merlin sold it for me. I wanted more Merlin. I wanted a lot more of that than I got. But it worked well. And the chemistry between Nimue and Arthur is there. And I kept kind of looking at her and again, Game of Thrones, you know, style of like Khaleesi. And, I mean, there are some really good elements, and there's a lot of good takeaways from this series. More so than, I think, with Warrior Nun. I think this is the better series, and if I'm going to put them in a versus category, I am going to say that they walked away with the win over Warrior Nun, in my opinion. So that's this week's Shakedown. Who knows what I'll do next week, but if you have any questions, comments, or ideas, or if you've actually read the book, shoot me a message. Leave it in the comments below. I'd be interested to hear your take on it and exactly what your shakedown would be. Moving right along, this week in comic book news, this kind of actually works with what I was talking about last week with restaurants that helped me survive the COVID, with the brewery who is very, very focused on a Dune-style setting. Actually, this week in comics, Boom Studios announced a new Dune comic book series called House Atreides. And this really has my interest piqued, because I don't think there's enough Dune material out there. And this really hits home, because I'm anxious and excited to see this film. And even more so with what this is. So Dune House Atreides is a comic book series that will be arriving in your shops October. This is being adapted and scripted by Brian Herbert and, of course, our friend Kevin J. Anderson, who wrote, co-wrote the prequel novels based on Frank Herbert's notes. And this is all kind of a precursor to the actual Dune story. So we get a little more background up in the world of what is going on. So this is like several years just before what we saw for Dune and what the new film that is taking to do it. So we're still on Arrakis as far as the planet, and we have a new character that is seeking the secrets and, you know, going through the paces of the spice, which Kevin J. Anderson, I love his writing style. I love what he has produced, especially when you're dealing with, like, his Star Wars novels, and the man is just so cool to hang out with. He's amazing, and I've had the opportunity to interview him when he was doing a Western trilogy a few years ago when we did a panel at Barnes & Noble, and Kevin's just great. And this, I have no doubt, will carry that kind of weight with, you know, the movie and his background in Star Wars. Even just looking at some of the artwork that's accompanying Kevin's work is, wow, it really has quite the Dune feel to it. And I don't even know how else to put it. Just even back in the day, you know, reading the novels, seeing the movie, Dune had kind of its own different qualities. And this is just really, it really looks unlike anything else that's out there right now, and I can't wait to see it. So get to your comic shop, let them know to add this to your pull list for sure, because I have a feeling this might be kind of a hot book. I have a pretty good feeling that this one's going to fly off the shelf, and I have a feeling that it's going to be smallly ordered. I don't think the shops are going to put a whole lot of faith in this, thinking that it's just going to sit, which I really don't believe that's going to be the case. So we'll see how it turns out. I'm signing up. There you go. In video game news, the second Marvel Avengers War premieres July 29th. I haven't really played this just because I've been so busy. Actually, the Marvel game that I have been playing has been Contest of Champions. So that's kind of where I've stayed. So the War Table, which is going to be the second to Marvel's Avengers. I mean, I've been looking at it, I've been watching the beta. There's a trailer out there that shows beta play. It will be, I don't know. This is the game that we made fun of because none of the characters looked like what they were supposed to. Nobody looks like their character in the movies, the comics. It just kind of completely broke away from everything. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm on board with this or not. Yeah. So the exclusive beta program has been begins on August 7th, and PlayStation 4 owners. I don't know. This is just, I know there's a lot of Marvel fans, and I know there's a lot of need for video game content out there. Of course, I've also been hooked on Dead by Daylight, and there's just been a lot of other games that kind of had me distracted. So we'll see. I know this should be fun, but at the same point, I'm like, maybe. We'll see. But it's just so just jarring to see the characters not look like anything. I mean, it's just kind of like, okay, I guess that's the Hulk. He's green. It will release simultaneously for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC on September 4th. So take a look online at the beta play. I mean, it still looks like fun, and it's still a Marvel game. I'm sure the components in the game engine will definitely scratch the itch of an RPG, just looking at the gameplay and all of that. So you know, build up your characters, and it should be fun. But I've got my eye on other games, especially like the Samurai Jack video game that I'm anxiously awaiting. I've seen all the voice actors and everybody that's involved with that, so the Samurai Jack game actually has my attention more than the Marvel game. So, but if you're a Marvel fan, this is definitely the way to go, and with it being on all platforms, definitely worth the pickup. Unlike this game that is not on all platforms, and it's pissing me off, The Ghost of Tsushima is out, and it is breathtaking. The graphics, the gameplay, all of it is just so intense. We talked about this last year because they premiered it at E3, or at least showed us things, a gameplay of E3. And now, of course, I've been watching people streaming it and playing it, and it is unlike anything else out there right now. I mean, it is simply beautiful. Of course, The Ghost of Tsushima takes players on a journey through 13th century Mongol, and you're basically a samurai, and you turn into a ninja. That is every 13-year-old's dream right there. I want to be a samurai, but I also want to be a ninja. I mean, it is so, so good looking. I talked to a few people who have PlayStation, who have played this, and they're completely enamored with it. They've been pulled in. It is intricate and fun and in a way to just kind of explore 1274 Japan. It factually happens during the Mongol invasion of Japan, from what I understand, and they didn't skimp on any of the details, and the characters are compelling. They play well, they fight well, they die well. So it is, you do get the freedom on how you want to play. So it is, you know, open world, and you do get the opportunity to kind of navigate through and do what you want to do if you want to be, you know, just how much of a Ronin you want to be. And I'm okay with that, because sometimes you just gotta serve someone a beat down. The bad side, the downside, and like I said, right now it's only on PlayStation. And I think that's, I don't know, I want to say it's a miss, and I feel bad. I mean, Sucker Punch Productions has a unique and specific contract with just Sony. So Sony has kept them under wraps and won't let them send it out with other things. Of course, you've got other hits, and maybe it's just me being, I don't know, old-fashioned, but I just don't need that many more consoles anymore. I know, you know, when you're dealing with, like, God of War or the Spider-Man game that were specifically for Sony, I don't think, you know, they're missing too much money. But I don't know. When I look at it, I just see missed opportunity. I see the ability that, you know, yes, you have all of the Sony people playing it, but, you know, not everybody's got a PlayStation. I mean, I just see this as, why wouldn't you want everyone playing your game? Why wouldn't you want everybody talking about it and it becoming, you know, an impressive little juggernaut for everybody to be playing, to be hooked on? I can't say look at Animal Crossing, because that's, you know, Switch, and that's its own little niche, and it's holding on strong. So I don't know. I guess I'm hurt. I'm feeling sad because I can't play it, and I so desperately want to. I don't even know if Private Cheeseburger's picked it up yet, because I know he's been busy working, and I know he's in the trenches, and I haven't heard from Tao to see if she was able to pick it up. So we'll see if I can get a review up there for you guys, because I may bake down and buy a PlayStation. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We will see on that one. So that's about it for the video game side. No, wait. Yeah, that's about it. Other than just been playing. Play. Play till the fingers fall off. So that just leaves us with the last bit of this week's podcast. That's right. The part everybody looks forward to, because everyone is looking for somewhere to eat. Yes, that's right. This is Restaurants That Helped Me Survive the COVID. This week, or I should say, as the weeks have gone on, I have talked about different restaurants that have helped me survive the COVID. Some fun, some interesting places, something new. Of course, my quest for the best wings, as well as who has the best drunken noodle. We will get back to those restaurants momentarily as I expand a little bit on this restaurant that kind of came into my radar a couple years ago. And it is it's a fan favorite for not only me, but the team. We have been there for events, and it is never a dull time. I'm, of course, talking about Total 80s Pizza. It is located in 1717 South College Avenue in the glorious, breathtaking Fort Collins, and it's worth the drive. In fact, if you have nothing better to do, because let's face it, there is nothing else to do, take a drive up to Fort Collins, order the pizza for pickup, and you're good to go. The flavors and the toppings that they use are great, and it does kind of have a reminiscent of the 80s flair and a New York East Coast style of pizza. The care and attention that they give these pies is spectacular. So good. But not only are we talking about the food and the pizza, but the whole theory and the driving force behind Total 80s Pizza, now that it's opened back up, is the 80s paraphernalia and mementos and artifacts. Yes, that's right, 80s artifacts that are decorating the walls and the restaurant throughout. There are different items that the owners have collected and have on display, from lunchboxes to posters to toys to all sorts of different items from different genres, and it is like a walk through the toy chest of any 80s kid. Even like 90s kids, you're going to see stuff that like, ah, I remember that, and it is really worth the drive. Even I know that they're doing dine-in, I think, now is available. They were doing pickup. If you're in the Fort Collins area, I do believe that they were also doing delivery. They're open, I think, all the time now, and totally worth the like I said, totally worth the drive. We've been up there for events, because they'll do like 80s-inspired events, Pee Wee Herman, Ghostbusters, of course, and just kind of some different fun things. They've even had like Corvette groups meet up there. Totally just worth the nostalgia and going and just kind of, you know, taking a trip down memory lane, in addition to having some of the delicious pizza. It's, you can't go wrong with, well, I guess you can go wrong with pizza, because a lot of people do, especially if you watch Jon Stewart's take on Chicago versus New York style pizza, because yes, folks, there is a difference. It's drastic in some regards. But Totally 80s does have it down to a science, and I can't say it enough. It's worth the drive. We've actually done the drive as Ghostbusters, gone up there, spend the day, grab some pizza, bring it back down with us. Totally worth it. So Totally 80s. And there you go. Restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. Give them some love. Give them some attention. They do have a Facebook page that is up, as well as a regular website. Jesus, I think I'd never talked before. Their hours are 10 a.m. through 8 p.m. And you can reach out to them if you want to put in your order ahead of time. Area code 970-867-5309. If you do want to do the whole order ahead and do the pickup, I recommend it, and just make a day out of it. It's an easy drive to Fort Collins during the weekend. Nice trip. And there you have it. Restaurants that have helped me survive the COVID. And I think that kind of wraps up this week's news. I know there are other kind of things floating out there, like Star Trek Lower Decks is kind of, everyone's kind of talking about, but I really haven't watched too much on that. I'm curious about the premise as far as, you know, everything that happens below deck and all that that's going on. There is a story about Fantastic Four getting new costumes in the comic, which I think is kind of, no one cares. I just give me a story. I don't really give a shit about their costumes. Give me a decent story. Give me the Fantastic Four back in its proper place, and that would make me happy. Also, Usagi Yojimbo is coming to Netflix, but we've spoken about that. We still don't have any additional information about what that story is going to be, except for it is a new character that is years after Usagi Yojimbo, and he's his ancestor. The artwork and all of that, we haven't seen much more other than what we've already reported on that side of it. So, yeah, that kind of explains it. Kind of the breakdown for this week. Next week, we'll be back with a whole new take on something, a whole new restaurant that helped me survive the COVID. Yeah. In the meantime, give us a like, give us a share. Please, if you have any questions, comments, put them in the links, the descriptions below. Be sure to go hit up Susie's webpage, SusieQs.com, or their Facebook page, or their Instagram. Get your Dragon Scale bracelet before they're gone, and you can't order them anymore, until she makes more, that is. And yeah, in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.